Hey, good morning, everyone. Certainly is a fantastic privilege to be able to look out upon 6,600 some people gathered together here for this Feast of Tabernacles. It takes me back a few years. The first time I attended the Feast of Tabernacles was in Belknap Springs in Oregon, just outside of the city of Eugene, Oregon. I was only about 4 or 5 years old at the time. That's a good 2 years ago. And it was only about 70 or 75 or so people attending the Feast of Tabernacles from all around the world. And now here we are in the city of Tucson, one of the sites where God's people are gathering together, preparing ourselves, as has been mentioned so many times already, to be that bride of Jesus Christ. And here we are, 6,600 strong. And there are many other sites that will be equal, or maybe even more, not only here in the United States, but I hope all of us will also be remembering the many, many other nations that are also keeping this Feast of Tabernacles, whether it be in Australia, where I spent 12 years of my ministry, and down in the land down under, or whether it be in Europe or other parts of the world. But we have heard, brethren, a good deal about being the bride of Jesus Christ. And this morning I wanted just to expound one small aspect of being that bride. Maybe it's small in one way, but I think very significant at the meaning and the depth in which this vision that the Apostle John saw and what it does mean for us as brethren here in this church today. I want to turn over to the book of Revelation, chapter 21. I think all of us have read this. I don't think there's very many people in here who do not like diamonds or emeralds or jacinth or any other number of precious stones and gems. But in Revelation, the 21st chapter in verse 2, it says, "And I, John, saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down from God out of heaven, prepared as a bride, adorned for her husband. And I heard a great voice out of heaven saying, Behold, the tabernacle of God is with men, and he will dwell with them, and they shall be his people, and God himself shall be with them and be their God. And down in verse 9, picking it up, it says, And there came unto me one of the seven angels, which had the seven vials full of the seven last plagues, and talked with me, saying, Come hither, and I will show you the bride, the Lamb's wife. Verse 10, And he carried me away in the Spirit to a great and high mountain, and he showed me that great city, the holy Jerusalem, descending out of heaven from God. And verse 11, Having the glory of God, and her light was like unto a stone most precious, even like a jasper stone, clear as crystal. And then he goes ahead and gives some more descriptions about that city. And then coming on down a few more verses, let's pick it up in verse 19. And it says that the foundations of the wall of the city were garnished with all manner of precious stones. The first foundation was jasper, the second was sapphire, and the third was chalcedony, and the fourth was an emerald, and the fifth was sardonyx, and the sixth sardius, and the seventh was chrysolite, and the eighth was beryl, and the ninth was a topaz, and the tenth was a chrysoprasus. And the 11th was a jacinth, and the 12th was an amethyst. So here we have described to us that city, also the bride of Jesus Christ, and he mentions all these fantastically precious and beautiful stones that have been prepared. I'm sure all of us have heard the song, Diamonds Are a Girl's Best Friend. But in one sense, we got to take this scripture to mean what it says, that precious stones are going to be God's wife and his best friend. And we have the fantastic blessing of being able to be a part of that bride, a part of that wife, with all of the decorations and ornaments in which Christ is going to put on her. So today I want to just talk a little bit about that, turning back to 1 Corinthians chapter 3. And again, what the Apostle Paul tells us, First Corinthians 3 and verse 12. Beginning verse 11, actually. It says, "For other foundation can no man lay than that which is laid, which is Jesus Christ. Now if any man build upon this foundation gold, silver, and precious stones, or wood, hay, and stubble, and there are three on each side of the ledger. You got gold and silver and precious stones on the one side, you got wood, hay, and stubble on the other. He says in verse 13, every man's work shall be made manifest, for the day shall declare it, because it shall be revealed by fire, and the fire shall try every man's work of what sort it is." Well, you take all of those precious stones, and I think we need to think a little bit about what makes a stone precious. What is going to make us as individuals who are going to garnish the very foundation, which is Jesus Christ? What makes a stone precious? And it does have three basic qualities, which I think are applicable to all of us. And this certainly is not getting into scientific explanations. But number one, its hardness is very important. Also, its crystallization, the shape and the form in which it takes, is very important. And also, its coloration, the color, the clearness, and the quality in which it is made up. So I want all of us to think of ourselves as those stones that are in the making right now. We are in the formation stage, whether it be a diamond, whether it be some other precious stones that we read there in Revelation 21. But before those stones get to the quality in which we see them, if you look at your rings or you look at your other jewelry, they have gone through a fantastic trial and testing period of time. They have had to undergo some of the most traumatic events to make them shine the light that they will show forth. If you look at your diamonds or your other emeralds or other precious stones, you cannot take a little bit of sandstone and put it out in an 80 degree weather and bask it there for a little while and expect to get something that's precious. It just doesn't work, brethren. It has to undergo tremendous heat. It has to go through a tremendous pressure being put upon it, or it will not turn into something that is as beautiful or as magnificent as a diamond. And I think one of the things I've noticed over the years, and this will be somewhere around my 35th Feast of Tabernacles, I got a good many friends and a good many relatives and a good many family members that at one time were a part of the Church of God. And they're not with us right now. I have had hundreds of people who at one time I knew in the early years of the Church of God up in the Willamette Valley in Oregon and other places, and they're not with us anymore. And I think one of the problems that come into their minds and a lot of our minds at times is that we forget to realize the magnitude of the change that God is making in all of us, from a human being to a divine member of the family of God. And we think it can just kind of like taking a little sandstone and putting it on a little bit of a shelf and letting it bask in the sun at 80 degrees and expect to get a gem out of it. It doesn't work. It doesn't work. It takes trauma. It takes tremendous pressure. And whenever we start to reduce the magnitude of that change, then we begin to falter, and we begin to stumble, and we no longer realize that this is the most important change and any substance that God has ever changed, to take a little bit of dirt that he made into a human being and then transform that, using the analogy of taking a little bit of soft sandstone that you can rub on it, and the grains will fall off and it'll wear down very quickly and very easily. But put under the right circumstances, at the right heat and at the right pressure and with the right amount of time, you can turn that little bit of sandstone that nobody wants, they'll throw it away, and turn it into one of the most beautiful of all the gems. And brother, that's what God is doing with each one of us right now. We're somewhere in the process. We're somewhere in that time that it takes to change and transform us from human beings into the very divine sons of God. And when we reduce that, then we're not willing to go all the way. So I want you to remember three points, three forces that are necessary to transform you, brethren, from human beings into the very family of God. And they are heat, H. It takes heat. It takes pressure to be putting you down under a tremendous force. And it takes time. It takes time also to do that. HPT. Turning over to the book of James. Maybe we can understand a little bit better then what James says here and what he means. In James 1, in verse 1 and 2 and 3. It says, James, a servant of God and of the Lord Jesus Christ, to the 12 tribes which are scattered abroad, the greeting. He says, my brethren, count it all joy when you fall into differing trials and temptations. Count it all joy when you find yourself in difficulties and in all kinds of problems. Why can we count it joy? Because he says in verse 3, knowing this, that the trying of your faith. And I mean to say, nobody is going to be in God's kingdom who has not had his faith tried and gone through every imaginable time of trial and tribulation, especially the ones that we may find the most difficult to take. God's going to put us under the heat and under the pressure. He's going to give us the time to develop the hardness, to develop the coloration, to develop the crystallization in which forms a precious stone. A stone that will always be that shape. And that's what we are striving to become. A stone that is going to be shaped within the laws of God. Within all of the laws of God. So he says, knowing this, that the trying of your faith works patience. But he says then, but let patience have her perfect work, that you may be perfect and entire, wanting nothing. The trying, the endurance, the time element being added to it. He says, the patience that you're going to have to show, having her perfect work, will make you perfect and entire because you have endured to the very end. So I hope all of us will, every time we go through a trial, every time you find yourself in a difficult situation, and you began to even think about giving up or quitting, take your wife's hand and look at the diamond that you gave her when you got married. Or take another precious stone and have a look at it. And let your mind then go back and think, what did that stone go through to make it the beautiful stone that it is? That makes it as precious as it is, that I would even want to give it to my wife at our marriage. Or what makes that stone so beautiful that I'm willing to spend dollars and hundreds of dollars at times to buy it, to give to somebody? What has it had to go through? What kind of heat and pressure? And then begin to think, what am I willing to go through to be one of the jewels, one of the gems that's going to garnish the foundation of the very temple of God? Turning back to Malachi 3, verse 17. Malachi 3. Malachi chapter 3, verse 17. It says, "And they shall be mine, says the Eternal of Hosts, in that day when I make up my jewels." They're not going to be just the jewels of the royalty of England. These are going to be the jewels of the God of the universe that he's going to gather together. He says that when I make up my jewels, and I will spare them, as a man says, that serves him. If we're willing to go through that HPT, the heat and the pressure, and give God the time, then we will be one of those jewels that God will spare when he makes up his crown jewels, when he returns to take his bride.